Tsun Kal Ubisur Tovot, everyone. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Daf Chof Dalet, and I just wanted to remind you of what it is that we've been learning. So we had some strange issues in our Mishnah that started talking about Zeborer Lo Echad. We explained yesterday in the Gemara that that means that you have, in cases where there's not a Bezdin Kavua, or where the two agree that they want to have their own dayanim, they can each one chooses one dayan, and then we have a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, whether those two dayanim are the one to choose the third dayan, or whether the Baalei Dinim themselves are the ones to choose the third dayan. This process was called Zabla, Zeborer Lo Echad, in an acronym. So the first thing that we spoke about was, after explaining what Zeborer Lo Echad means, was the basis of the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And there it was the question of whether not only the dayanim need to be feeling that it's appropriate for them to be together with this additional dayan. That's for sure that they have to agree. It's the way that we came out. The question is whether the Baalei Dinim necessarily have to agree on the third member. That was the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And we went into yesterday explaining how the Rush points out to be very careful not to think that the process of Zavla is a lawyers that you're selecting, but rather it's the way in which both of the Baalei Dinim are more likely to be mekabel the din because they initially agreed. And therefore, it works out better from both sides. The dayanim are not under pressure, and the Baalei Dinim are not going to walk away disgruntled and trying to appeal the case. Then we came out with the very strange words of Rabbi Meir, which Reish Lakish said yesterday. How could someone with a peh kadosh like Rabbi Meir say something that is so idiotic that a person is able to passel arbitrarily the other person's dayan, or the person, that okay. I mean, if we're talking about the type of dayanim that are not dayanim mumchim, maybe, but edim, how in the world could you passel arbitrarily someone else's edim? And that's what it turned out that Rabbi Meir was saying. So how exactly do we understand the right of someone to passel a dayan? So we had three different approaches to the issue. The first approach was only sufficient to answer the problem of arbitrarily declining a particular judge and disqualifying him. And we said that that was referring to Arkaot Shebesuria, who are not really Dayanim, that are Mumchim. And they are like the type of cases that you have in the United States where you just select a bunch of idiots and they're the ones who are going to decide if you're chayav or potter. You call them the jurists. But essentially, the jurisprudence is not very prudent. So that would be your ability to arbitrarily say you don't want to be. But then it's very similar to the idea of being able, lahavdil, to being able to arbitrarily passel a juror that you don't like, you know. So there's a certain number of jurors that you could passel with civil cases. It's basically that type of din. That was the first approach. However, that didn't help us in understanding how you could possibly passel a dayan, because an aid is, for all intents and purposes, a mumcha in every way. The Torah doesn't give any particular, if he saw it, then he saw it. And so the way that we came to understand that was, actually, we were in the middle of an additional three different approaches to how to understand that. And we talked about cases in which the person had already been mekabel, an aid, even though it was only an aid echad, and he accepted it upon himself, and that's what Rabbi Meir means, that you can change your mind. The problem was, is that if it means you can change your mind, and this was true both about a dayan or an aid, then it's merely repetitive of the mission that we're going to have later today, in which a person who accepts a dayan who was inappropriate, like the other guy's father or whatever, he could change his mind. And we had the same machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim there, and if that's all that it's about, why would we need to have a repetitive machlokas here? And we explained that there's a difference between an aid echad, who is never kosher, which is what we'd be talking about over here, and between a Dayan who is always kosher, except that you happen to be his kid, or the other litigant happens to be his kid. And therefore, I would think that one side, either Chachamim would be Meir to Rebbe Meir in the other case, and so on. So that would explain that possibility. Then we add another possibility. Another possibility is that it's talking about a question of the litigant himself and another individual actually testifying against the Dayan or against the aid and disqualifying them legally. And it turned out that the only way that that would work, because you would be considered to be a nogea be'eduso, you're not an impartial witness, therefore we wouldn't accept you, is if the issue was an arar of mishpacha, and you were talking about a completely different issue, which merely had implications. So the question was whether that family and its origins were avodim, and you may have been testifying about something completely irrelevant to your case. But once the family turned out to be Avadim, the witness that had been born against you turns out to be Puzzle also. So that turned out to be the Machlokas possibly between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim, whether a person who is ultimately going to impact his case is called Nogea Be'edut, no matter how many steps away that would the impact on his case would be. Okay, again, it's not in any way connected to the fundamental halacha of Zabla, obviously. And the idea over here with this approach is that it's a hechatimsa. It's a way that a Mishnah sometimes selects a very particular case in order to teach us a din. And we threw that in over here as a machlokas about Nogea Be'edus. That was the other approach. Then we had Rav Dimi, who quoted Rabbi Yochanan. We're going to see we have another approach today in Rabbi Yochanan. But Rabbi Dimi's approach to Rabbi Yochanan is that it's talking about where the individual who was suing says he actually has different groups of Edim, and he could bring all kinds of different people to testify. And now the question is, well, if he's got more than one kind of Edim, is there a need for him to put up or show up? I mean, he said he's got four witnesses. Does he have to bring all four witnesses? So according to Rabbi Meir, he'd have to bring all four witnesses anyway, which is part of the machlokas we had before, which was called Tzarich Levarer. And therefore, you're not really a Nogea Be'edus to passel one of these witnesses, because, look, after all, he's got other witnesses, so you're not really changing the case. That was the last case that we had yesterday, and today we're going to see a variation on that theme at the bottom line of Chof Gimel Amid Beis, where Ravin quotes Rabbi Yochanan differently, and this is also Rabbi Yochanan. Yesterday was Rabbi Dimi quoting Rabbi Yochanan. And he says something which on the surface sounds like he is ready to avoid, forgive me, he is ready with this approach to avoid the very kvetchy deal that Rav Dimi's approach required, that they were talking about this very specific case of a put up or shut up. In other words, it was a case of Tzorich Levarer or not. So this is what we thought initially. That here, Reisha is actually talking about Eidim Psulim V'Dayanim Kesherim, and the Seifa is talking about Dayanim Psulim V'Eidim Kesherim. So what happened over here was like this. In the Reisha, what we had was the Eidim that actually were proven to be Psulim. You were able to actually prove on the basis of objective proof that this aid was possible. Maybe he was a relative, maybe he was a ganav. But the point is that once it turned out that you were right all along when you were claiming, this guy's no good for an aid, and we were laughing at you, and then you were able to show that you were right, now that's very suspicious. So once we saw that you were able to prove your case when it came to the aidim, even though you don't have any basis legally to passel the dayan, we give you the credit of your position to passel the dayan, because we say, look, he turned out to be right when it came to the aid. We should take him very seriously. He says the dayan is no good. Let's find another dayan. So that is called a migu. So migu to passel the aidim. Once he was able to passel the aidim legally, so we believe him when he comes to passel the dayanim. Well, that's the case in the strange latter psak of Rebbe Meir, where he says you could pasul an aid arbitrarily. Well, that was talking about where you ended up proving that the judge that you had rejected was absolutely objectively pasul for being a dayan. Oh, so now we see that you were right about the judge. So we have the same idea. Migu, we took you seriously about the judge. We had to. We're going to have to take you seriously about the aid. And therefore, that's the special case that you can cancel the aid. That was what Rebbe Meir was referring to. If you think you're as beautiful as Ori, I'd advise you to turn your camera around. All right. So what do we have now? Amigo situation. Matki Florova, this makes no sense. I mean, I don't understand. When you can't compare, I mean, that was a sneaky, you were trying to get us to believe you with Amigo, you know. Once you were able to give Amigo for the Reisha, so now we should accept your Amigo for the Seifa. Very smart. But it's ridiculous. I mean, it's all very nice, says Rava. But Bishlam Amigo de Pasli Eidim, Pasli Nami Dayani. Okay, that I understand. I mean, after all, there's lots of other places you can go for Dayanim. So even though you don't have proof, we should take you seriously because you turned out to be right about your claims that the witness was a no good neck. But the other way around is ridiculous. I mean, you're telling us, well, because I was able to prove that the Dayan was no good, so now I should be able to avoid the whole case and arbitrarily actually disqualify his witnesses. And I should say, you know, well, you trusted me on this, turned out to be right. I mean, that's crazy. There are no other witnesses. It's not as if it's the same situation. So there's always, in the first case, there's always somebody else you can go to. But to say that Migu de Pasli, Dayone Pasli, Nami Eidim, I mean, how does that follow? There's obviously Eidim Tuleka. If there are no other witnesses, you're going to blow the whole case based on this silly Migu. Well, he turned out to be right about the Dayan, so maybe he's right about the Eid. No, no. Yeah, of course, Rava, you're right. We were hiding a little bit from you. What was that little bit? That even Ravin understands that Rabbi Yochanan was referring to a case where the guy said that he has additional witnesses. What? So what are you saying? That and if there were no additional witnesses, Aleka Katachrino Mai, that he would not be able to do anything with his Migo? So then you're saying the same thing that Rav Dimi said. Now, obviously, it's not the same thing that Rav Dimi said, because Rav Dimi said you don't need a Migo. Rav Dimi said that because of the fact that it's irrelevant since there's other witnesses that are going to have to appear anyway, that's true. But when we say it's the same thing that Rav Dimi said, what we mean is, so what did you gain? You didn't gain anything. You're basically stuck with this weird approach that it's talking about a case where a guy claimed he had additional witnesses, and you're back to the whole issue of Tzarek Levare or Ein Tzarek Levare. So isn't that the same thing? It is the same thing. I never said that I was coming to get away with that. The difference is that the way Ravin said it, we don't want you to make the mistake that you can arbitrarily disqualify a witness just because it's irrelevant because there's other witnesses. It's only when you have the Migo. That's the difference. But we're not really gaining anything with Ravin's approach. So, we're just keeping the record clean so you understand what Rabbi Yochanan's real approach was. Okay, so we've got four different things we need to take into consideration. One of them was only going to deal with Rabbi Meir's first point, which was passing a dayan. The other three were able to deal with all of Rabbi Meir's points, passing a dayan or passing an aid. So now we're finished with that. There was something that really fascinates me, and that is the way that Reish Lakish talked about Rebbe Meir. Now that, Reish Lakish said, could a holy mouth like Rebbe Meir say something so ridiculous? Rebbe Meir never says anything ridiculous, and actually, I want to explain what he really meant. Now, the last I heard, Reish Lakish was one of the toughest and roughest Trump kind of supporters that you'd ever see. How would he talk so nicely? Why would he say nice things about Rebbe Meir? He usually just goes like a tank and rolls over everybody. So is it possible that Omer Reish Lakish Pekadosh Yomar Dover Zeh Tnei Edo? That's how he said. It means 1/8. And that's where we got into the whole question of can you passel a single aid once you accepted him. That was the second approach that we had. But Amy, is it really Reish Lakish's way to talk to people nicely? Didn't Ula say, look, man, if you saw Reish Lakish at the Beis HaMedrash, what you were looking at was, Kilo Oker Harim V'Tochanam Zebizeh. I mean, you were looking at a bunch of boxers or lions. I mean, he would pick up mountains, grind them against each other, pulverize them. I mean, it's not the kind of person that's going to sweetly say, oh, how lovely Rabbi Meir would speak. So, is that really what he said? Ravina, I don't understand. What's so amazing about that? I mean, it's all very nice to say that Reish Lakish was a grinder of mountains. The problem is that Rabbi Meir was the grinder of the Grand Canyon. I mean, Kolaroa Rabbi Meir bebeis hamedrash kilo oker hare harim v'tochanam zebizeh. You think a couple of little mountains that Reish Lakish handles were something? You should have seen Rabbi Meir. I mean, so obviously, I mean, he was much smarter than Reish Lakish. So why shouldn't Reish Lakish have Derek Eretz to Rabbi Meir? I mean, he should be very nervous about saying anything against Rabbi Meir. I mean, he may get ground up in Rabbi Meir's mountains too. I don't understand your question. No, it wasn't a question. You misunderstood. On the contrary, we were saying, look how beautiful it is that Reish Lakish would speak so lovingly about Rabbi Meir. Bo re'e kama b'chavavim ze'ezeh. These are people that are used to knocking each other out. You know, we should have left him bleeding on the street. And instead, look how he's talking about him. Because what this shows is that if you're not talking about Nuchamta Shel Torah at a moment where somebody's making a terrible mistake, of course there's tremendous love and care between the Talmidei Chachamim. Like, we have a similar situation. Once Rebbe was sitting, and he was giving a shir, and in the shir he said, Osir latmin et atzoneh. You're not allowed to insulate on Shabbos something that's cold because of its similarity to doing hatmona for something that's hot. Okay. Rebbe Shmuel, Rebbe Yossi, was sitting there in the shir, and he was shocked because he said, Abba, he tir latmin et atzoneh. My father, Rabbi Yossi, said we're allowed to do that. We can put insulation all around the cold water and keep it cold. Rebbe said, well, that's it. I changed my mind. Kvar horazaken. If this gadol, Rabbi Yossi, the father of Rabbi Shmuel, he already said the halacha, I'm not going to argue on that. So Papa said the same thing over there, and that's what was meant here. If Rabbi Yossi would have been alive, and he would have been in that shir, and he would have heard Rabbi said that, he would have been Yoshev the Kofuf Lifnei Rabbi. He would have treated Rabbi with the greatest deference, as if everything that Rabbi said was right. And nonetheless, if that's the, I mean, we know that that's true because Rabbi Shmuel, who was Rabbi Yossi's son, he was a fully competent, as much as his father, and had the same reputation, and he would sit that way. Yaakov of Yosef and Rabbi, and nonetheless, Rabbi, when he heard about Rabbi Yossi, he stood up and said, "I changed my mind. If Rabbi Yossi said that, far be it for me to argue." Okay, so you see that indeed there was a tremendous amount of mutual respect. And indeed, we have a pasuk that talks about the difference between the respect of Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, like Rabbi Meir and Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi, and those in Bavel. And in Bavel, they don't have real respect. And this is the pasuk. Mai dichtiv, how do you explain the fact that we find in Zechariah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and took two sticks? So he says, "Akach lishnei maklot leachad karati noam ulachad karati chovlim." What does that mean? I took these two wacko sticks. One of them was called sweet, and the other one was called boxer. Right? Okay. So noam refers to the Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because they're so sweet to each other. Sheman imim zel zel halacha. When they discuss things with each other, they have derech eretz. They love each other, appreciate each other. But chovlim, those are the talmidei chachamim in Lakewood and Bovell. We're over there in Chutz Laretz. They're mechablim zel zel halacha. They're basically going at each other. Everybody's trying to prove their position. They don't have real love for the other. And because of that, these are remotsim to the different ways the Torah would develop in Eretz Yisrael versus in Chutz Laretz. There's another pasuk like that. That pasuk is also not the same place, but it's also in Zechariah. And it says over there that the Malach shows Zechariah that there are these two zeisim on top of the, this is the whole vision of the menorah of Zechariah. And he asks him, who are these? What is the remez over here of these two things of oil? And he said, Eli Shnei B'nei Yitzhar, that are Umdim Aladon Kol Aretz, the two children of Yitzhar. Yitzhar means oil, olive oil. And then, before that, when we were talking about the description of the menorah that was pumping, it said that there were two actual olives that was there, and the pipes were coming and were putting the olive oil. It's a big difference between a vision of olive oil and a vision of olives. So Yitzhar, says Rabbi Yitzhak, Yitzhar, that's like oil. That's Talmidei Chachamim Sheberetz Yisrael. That's a remez to those in Eretz Yisrael that are like oil. They're soft to each other, smooth to each other, no friction. So they're always, it's as if they're lined with olive oil. And then the other one that describes Shnaim Zeisim Aleo. Zeisim are very bitter and they require a lot of crushing before you get anything out of them. That's a reference to Talmidei Chachamim in Bovel, that they are as bitter to each other as olives are. Merurim ze leze b'halacha kizayit. So it's always shocking to people to see the way sometimes that Talmidei Chachamim treat each other. So we have another beautiful Zechariah pasuk, once we're on this, and we want to describe the way that Torah develops in Bavel as opposed to the way it develops in Eretz Yisrael. So Zechariah has this strange vision. And in this strange vision, he sees these women with wings, and they look like the wings of an Chassidah, which is an interesting kind of thing. And, oh, okay, so it's got these beautiful wings. But, of course, Chassidah is a reference to also Chassidut. So here they are, and it says that they're all basically full of hot air. So the pasuk says, I lift up my eyes, and I see these two women, and they're going out. And they've got this hot air that's filling up their wings. They all, both of them have these big, beautiful wings, like a chassidah, like a stork. Vatisena et ha'efa, bein ha'aretz bein ha'shamayim. And they're carrying this container, this big container. And this was a container that we find that it was merames to the Yetzer Hara. And it was holding the Yetzer Hara that we saw elsewhere. And I asked the Malach, where are they going with this efa? Omar el ha'malach adover. And he said, oh, well, they're taking this Eifa because they want to build a home with it in the land of Shinar, which, of course, is the land above them. So what is this strange metaphor? You know what this is? These two women are a reference to Chanifa and Gasuta Ruach. And that's why their wings are full of hot air, because they're so arrogant. And they are also carrying around, they look like Hasidim, so that's why they have the wings of a Hasid, you know, so they're wearing big black hats and, you know, nice black garments to show that they're big Talmidei Chachamim. This is all a bunch of crap, basically. And they are carrying these midas of Chanifa. This Chanifa is, it's flattery, it's the way that people try to, you know, live up to what other people are going to consider to be the correct way to act. So they're basically sycophants. And they were going to carry those two midas to Bavel. And that those two midas were included in the Yetzer Hara that was inside of that big ephah that they were carrying. It was full of garbage. But wait a minute. It says over here that it went down to Bavel, but that's not where Gatzut HaRuach went to. Gatzut HaRuach went to Bavel? I thought that's not like the ultimate in arrogance. The ultimate in arrogance is Iran. And it says, Beferish Vamamar. Look, in the whole world, if we split up all of the arrogance into 10 parts, 9 parts belong in Persia, and the rest of the world could share the rest of the arrogance. So how can you say that the place for arrogance is Bavel when it's actually Paras? So something's wrong. No, it's not wrong. It landed in Bavel, but from there it rolled down to Iran. So Yishtarvuvi, Yishtarvev Le'elam. It's got to start somewhere, you know. But then it sort of settled in Elam. By the way, if you look at the pasuk carefully, you'll see that, of course, that's what happened. Because when the Novi asks, so where are these two women going? So he says, leave note la. What do you mean la? There are two of them. Why does it say leave note la by it? Ah, because one of them, both of them went to Bavel, but only one of them went to build a house. The other one was going to continue moving on down to Paras. So Shema Amina, that it's really true that even though Hanifa, that's definitely still in Bavel, all the sycophancy with everybody playing up to, you know, whoever's in charge of the yeshiva or whatever. But when it comes to Gaiva, you got to move to Elam to see what real Gaiva is. But that doesn't seem to be true either, because we know that we were taught in the Braita that Simen Legasut HaRuach Aniyut. What proof that you are afflicted by Gatzus HaRuach, by arrogance, and that you're all stuck up, is the fact that you're poor. And Aniyut, we know that poverty is part of the way Bavel is. They were very poor, because that same Gemara says that there were 10 kavim of Aniyut that went to the world, and if you split it all up, Bavel took 9 out of the 10. So they are desperate. But then that should show that that's where the Gatzut HaRuach settled. No, you don't understand. When it says Aniyut, is it? It doesn't mean poverty in terms of money. It means poverty in terms of Torah. And that was not in Bavel. It was Elam that had no Torah. Aniyut Torah, Dichtiv. This is what Shlomo HaMelech was referring to in Shir HaShirim. Achot lanu ketana v'shadayim ein la. What is that referring to? We have this young sister, and we don't know what to do with her because she never developed any breasts. So ma la'asot b'achoteinu b'yom sheyidu barba. People are talking about going out with her, but she's immature. What is that referring to? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that's referring to Elam. Elam never developed breasts. So meaning what are breasts? So as we saw, that Moshe and Aaron are considered to be the two breasts. Moshe refers to himself. Am I supposed to continue nursing Klal Yisrael like this? How long do I continue nursing? And remember that this was the Aaron HaBris, where we had the two poles of the Aaron that were sticking out. The Bade Aaron were meant to look like breasts that were sticking out of a woman's chest when it came out of the Barochet. So I see that Ori is a little bit shocked at these references. Maybe you have to shield her a little bit at this tender age. I don't know. So anyway, the meaning, therefore, we see is that this is Elam. Why don't they have breasts? Because they may have learned, but they never developed to the point that they were able to suckle others, meaning that they were unable to teach. So zachta lilmod velo zachta lelamed. So that makes a lot of sense, that actually, although gasut haruach causes aniyut, the aniyut that it causes is aniyut in Tera. And therefore, it's consistent with saying that the gasut haruach ended up in Elam, because that's where you find an aniyus in Tera that never developed to the point of being able to teach others. Why do we use the word bavel? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, bavel is balula. Balula means that it's completely well mixed. It's like saturated with Tera. whether it's Mikra, it's Belula B'Mikra, it's Belula B'Mishnah, it's Belula B'Talmud, and that's the Parshtas, but the way that the Rishonim explain it is that actually it means the opposite. And this is the way it's brought in most Sfarim, is that Bavel, they don't learn Torah properly. They mix everything up. Instead of teaching children properly, start with Tanakh, and then go ahead and teach them Mishnah. And after they know Mishnah, then teach them Talmud. No, they have to take five-year-olds and give them Talmud classes, you know? So they start off with mixing up the Mishnah and the Mikra and the Talmud, and they end up never learning properly. That's what it's a reference to. And that's why that's how the Tosfos brings it in terms of how come they actually could get away with that. Because that's against the halacha. I mean, it's a fair Mishnah, but Chomish L'Mikra. So Tosfos says that there's semech on the fact that if you learn Talmud Bavli, that you're always, it says you're supposed to be B'Shali Zman Limudai. So how are we going to be Mekayim that? People learn Gemara all day long. So he says there's semech on Bavel being mixed Talmud, Mishnah, and Mikra. So if you learn the Daf Yomi, you're learning so many psukim every day, that you're basically reviewing the Tanakh also. You're reviewing your Mishnah also. But it's got to be Daf Yomi, understand. Otherwise, it'll be all day long just Gemara. B'mechashakim Moshivani kimitei olam, when it says in the Pasuk in Eicha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put me into the dark as if I'm dead forever. What is that referring to? Omer B'Yirmiya, that is referring to the Talmud of Bavel. You never get anywhere. You never get any solutions. The more questions you raise, the more questions are raised by the questions that you raised, until you feel that you're in a fallen down the, what do they call it? Fall down the rabbit hole. So when you get involved in a sugya in the Talmud Bavli, you never know if you're ever going to get out. That's not that way in the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi keeps everything clean cut, sweet, and concise. You know exactly where you're going. But there's no end to the machine language that you're going to have to discuss in the Talmud Bavli. As the Zohar points out, that's the Vayanel, that's the Inui of Klal Yisrael, you know, Ba'avanim, B'chomer, B'levenim, that those are all remozim to different ways of learning in the Talmud Bavli. There's also a beautiful Shalah that brings the Zohar, and the Zohar says that the extent of the Limud in terms of the intellectualism, the chess games that are played in the Talmud Bavli with the Pilpul, the Amuroyim, the Veretz of Bavel, says the Zohar, they can make you forget about God. All you're doing is learning Torah. There is no God. So, then it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is matzil them, and that's this pasuk, that even though b'mechar shechkim, v'ar shivani kim te'olam, as the Gemara says elsewhere, ha'am ha'olech b'choshech ra'a or gadol, that after going through all of this hell of getting through the Talmud Bavli seven times, you know, like Richie's just beginning here, you know, he's gone for 100. And at the end, Ra'u or Gadol. So even though they may forget God for a while, in the end, it opens up their eyes. All right, Sir Richard, we're ready for the next Mishnah. Thank you. So yesterday we saw, and this morning we reviewed, that if somebody says that I accept an inappropriate and invalid dayan, that, look, that's up to him. He can do that. And that one of the ways that we understood, that was Reish Lakish's way of understanding Rabbi Meir, was that if he accepted a single witness, he can change his mind. And here in this Mishnah, as we're about to see, we talked about it before, if somebody accepts the wrong kind of dayan, or the wrong kind of shvuah, we have the same machlokas about whether you could change your mind or not, machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham. So, says the Mishnah, Amar lo, suppose a guy says to the other Baldin, he says, look, I'm an easy guy to deal with over here. We don't have to go to all kinds of fancy courts. I will accept your own father or my father. We don't need anybody, you know. My father's a nice rabbi. I want to sit down in the living room. Let's see what he has to say. or your father. Let's see what he has to say. Now, we're going to explain in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, which we had yesterday also, that we're talking about, he didn't say only my father. He said my father will be one of the three Dayanim, or your father will be one of the three Dayanim. Or he said, I don't need to go to a fancy court. You know, you want to call the guys out there, bring in some cowboys, three roe bucker. I'm telling you, any cowboy would have the sense to see that I'm right and will paskin like me. So we can go to a court made up of cowboys. Give me shlosha roe bakar, and that's good enough for me. Rebbe Meir says, well, he can change his mind. Now, it's not clear. Does that mean he can change his mind when the court says he's guilty? Well, forget it. I want a real court. Or can he only change his mind before? All right, that's what we're going to see in the Gemara. And the Chachamim say he can't change his mind, no matter what, under any circumstances. Now, what about a case where he was supposed to make a shvua? Now, normally making a shvua, that's like a very serious thing. He's going to have to hold a sefer Torah. He uses the Shem Hashem, and this is terrible. So the guy says to him, listen, you don't have to make a big shvua to me. Just, you know, tell me by my life, you know, by the life of your own head. Dorli b'chai roshcha, make an informal shvua to me. Can you change your mind? Rebbe Meir says yes. He can insist that he wants a real shvua in the best sense. Whereas the Chachomim say, no, cannot change your mind once you're committed. And as we saw yesterday, Rav Dimi, Bereder of Nachman, Bereder of Yosef explained that when you say, I accept your father as a judge, he means as one of the three. Now, it isn't clear here who is the one that said that I want to change my mind. So it isn't either clear about at what point you want to change your mind. So let's take a look at those things. Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel. Where we have a machlokas over here is where the person who was suing, he wants his money. So he says, look, if your father says that I don't owe you the money, I moichol the money. Forget it. So there, I understand that we're arguing about whether you can change your mind because you were moichol. And if you're meichel something, even though you don't have any kind of kinyan or anything else, but mechila is mechila without a kinyan. But suppose you said, how about if it's the guy who's being sued? And he says, you know what? If you get anybody to paskin like you, I will pay you. I'm convinced that I don't owe you a dime and that your own father wouldn't say that I owe you a dime. As if your father says I owe you that money, I'll pay you that money. Now, over there, you're not being mochel. Over there, you are committing yourself to positively giving somebody else money. Well, for that, if you didn't make a kinyan, that's where, in that case, everybody says, well, if you didn't make a kinyan, why shouldn't you be able to change your mind? There, everybody would agree. This is what Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel. But Rabbi Yochanan says, actually, they're arguing in a case where you committed yourself to give. What did Rabbi Yochanan mean? Did Rabbi Yochanan mean that's the only case where they argue? But if you said, I mochel you, maybe the idea is that once you mochel, everyone agrees you can't change your mind. Mechila is mechila. You did the mechila, then it's over. Or maybe Rabbi Yochanan is simply adding even the case of etein lecha. But it's also a machlokas. Either case is a machlokas. I'm really sorry about running out of voice here. Or maybe, bein bezu u bein bezu machloket. Toshma? Let's see if we can figure out what Rabbi Yochanan meant. Yomar Rava. Rava was the one who actually explained that the machloket is specific. I know, just take it, people do that. The machlokas is be'etein lecha. So if you say, I'll give it to you. There's a machlokas. But if you were meichel the money, you say, if your father says, you know, that this money is not owed to me, I'm meichel it. That's it. Over there, everybody agrees that it's meichel, and you can't change your mind afterwards. Now, if what Rabbi Yochanan said was exactly this, Amr Bishwama, that Rabbi Yochanan meant to say that the machlokes is only in the case of a tein lecha. But b'machulacha, everybody is meida, that you can't change your mind. So then, okay, then Rava is at least following Rabbi Yochanan's psak. But if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan is saying either case is a machlokas, so then Rava is not agreeing with anybody. He's not agreeing with Rabbi Yochanan, because Rava says, actually, that the din is, as he says, specifically, we're trying to prove it from Rava, remember. So he says, beferish, that the machlokas is only in the case of a tein lecha. But if you said, I'm machel, everybody agrees. If Rabbi Yochanan does not hold of that, and for sure, obviously Shmuel didn't hold of that, so who is he paskening like? Neither? What kind of proof is that? I don't understand. What if Rava doesn't agree with either? Rava can argue with whoever he wants. Rava, time it in Afshikomer. What's your problem? Maybe this is a third shita. I don't know. So maybe Rabbi Yochanan meant that it's the machlokas is in either case. He disagrees with that. And according to Shmuel, it's talking about the machlokas is dafka in the mochalacha case, which he argues with. And he says his own case, that the machlokas is only in the etenlacha case. I don't understand how you're trying to prove what Rava holds based on what Rabbi Yochanan holds. Okay, I got another proof. Because, look, Esri Rav Achabar Taklifal Rav. Excuse me, Rava, but how could you say that the machlokas is only in the case in which he's saying Yetein Lecha? Read the Mishnah. The next case in the Mishnah was Hayachayev Lechaver Shvua. Somebody needed to make a Shvua, and the guy said to him, you don't need to make a Shvua with a Sefer Torah and the whole thing. Just make an informal Shvua out of Bezdin that by my life, I swear that I don't owe you the money. And Rabbi Meir says you can still change your mind. The Chachamim say you cannot change your mind. Now, all the Shvuas that are in the Torah are shvuas in which the person is going to say that I'll have to accept your shvua and I won't be able to collect my money, right? That's what a shvua is. I'm claiming you owe me 50 and you say only 25. So you have to take a shvua. If you take that shvua, you don't owe me anything, right? Fine. So then that is a classic case of machulacha. You don't owe me anything. And nonetheless, Rabbi Meir says, you can change your mind. So how can you, Rava, claim that no, Rabbi Meir only meant you could change your mind if it's an etein lecha, but if it's a machulacha, you can't change your mind. The case in the Mishnah of Shvua is a case of machulacha. Well, actually, says Rava, I think we're talking about the type of shvuas where there are shvuas where you can make a shvua and you can take the money. Let's say, remember we had the case of a workman who says, you never paid me. And the guy says, what do you mean? I had the money in my hand. I gave everybody money. So we said over there, he doesn't remember. He's got 50 people he's paying. He doesn't remember if he paid you. So in that case, you can be nishba that you weren't paid as long as it's on the same day. You can be nishba that you weren't paid and you can collect. And there are other types of shvuas. We're mapping shvuas. There's lots of cases where you'll make a shvua and you'll collect. That's what it's referring to. If the guy said, if you're ready to make a shvua by your life or the hair of your head or whatever, I'll accept that. That you could change your mind on. Why? Because that's a commitment to give you money based on the shvua. So that would be the equivalent of etein lecha. But then that means that we've got two cases in the Mishnah exactly the same. Because the case in the Reisha was that you could change your mind about a dayan. And that would be even if we're talking about tein lecha. So what is the difference between the first case in the Mishnah and the second case in the Mishnah? No, the difference is that first we're talking about a case where it's dependent on what someone else decides. It's dependent on what your father decides, my father decides. And then the other case is talking about where it's dependent on what I decide. I am accepting the shvua. And why do I need to know there's a machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Chachamim in both of these cases? Vitzricha. I need to know both cases, because if the Mishnah was only talking about the case of the fathers, where it's dependent on someone else's opinion, maybe that's why Rabbi Meir says you can change your mind. Because when he agreed to abide by the decision of the father, he wasn't really 100% sure that he's into that. because he doesn't know what the father's going to do. But, I mean, where he says, I'm ready to accept your shvua by the hairs of your head. I mean, you know, he knows he's made up his mind. So in that case, maybe he was making up his mind. So maybe Rabbi Meir only said in the case of the fathers, Mishum de logo maro makne, because he says to himself, you know, am I really sure that they're going to paskin in my favor? No. So maybe he wasn't really committed, but where he himself made the commitment, so then he was committed. Talabadas Hatzma, maybe Rabbi Meir would agree to the Rabbona. And if I would have had only the other case where he accepts the Shvua, maybe that's why the Rabbona would say, well, you knew what you were doing. You accepted the Shvua. You were already mokal. That's what you're going to do. And you were willing to commit to even give. But maybe in the other case where the guy never really meant it because he wasn't sure that the judges were going to paskin him like him, maybe they'd be motivated to Rabbi Meir that you can change your mind. Therefore, we need both cases. Now, the next question, as pointed out before, you never explained to me at what point you could change your mind. Does it mean when the courts decided against you, that then you can't change your mind? Or does it mean even before that, you can't change your mind? Amar Reish Lakish. The only machlokas here is before the Gemar Din. But after the Gemar Din, everybody agrees. But obviously, at this point, you can't change your mind. I mean, you let it go until the very moment that whatever happened was what you said you're going to accept. That's when you change your mind. Get out of here. It meant nothing, in other words. You said, yeah, if your father, yeah. And then when he ends up saying the opposite, now all of a sudden, it meant nothing. So it's basically, you're giving me a bunch of bull when you say that. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, the machlokas is after the court gives its judgment. Does he mean, as we asked before, Iboilu, does he mean that's the only time that they were arguing, but that before the Gemar Din, everybody, even the Chachamim, agree you could change your mind? Or did Rabbi Yochanan mean in either case, whether it was before the Gemar Din or after the Gemar Din, in either case, we have the Machlokas of Rabbi Meir saying you can change your mind, and the Chachamim saying you cannot, once you've committed, change your mind. Well, here too, we have the same type of raya that we had before. Because Rava paskined that if a person was kibel of karov o pasul, the din is that he can change his mind before the verdict. So if nei gmar din, yochol achzor bo. But the acher gmar din, eino yochol achzor bo. And therefore I say to you, if you're going to tell me that what Rabbi Yochanan meant is that la'acher gmar din machlokas, everybody agrees, so then Rava would be paskening halacha here, according to the way Rabbi Yochanan understands it, and he would be paskening like the Rabbana, which is the Rabbin. We do not believe that Rava was going to paskin against the Rabbanan, according to Rabbi Meir, do we? I mean, you can't paskin like a Yochid, but welcome the Rabbin. So it makes sense that Rav paskin like Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of the Rabbana. But if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan himself said that actually there's a machlokas in either case, so then how is Rav saying what he said? That if you were actually li'acher gemar din einu yochol, but you are able before the gemar din. So nobody said that. Rabbi Yochanan also didn't say that. The only one who said that was Rabbi Meir, but he wouldn't have paskin like Rabbi Meir against the Rabbanan. And this is a psak that he's giving. He's not giving a pshat. He said this is what the din is. So, alav shmamina le'acher gemar din machlokas shmamina. We don't believe that Rava would have gotten to say a pshat in the Mishnah. He would say his own das. To give a flat-out psak, he would have followed the peskim agdelim before him. He wouldn't have gone like the Rabbi Meir. He would have gone like Rabbi Yochanan. So it would have to be Rabbi Yochanan in the Rabbanan. So Shema Amina, indeed, that Rabbi Yochanan meant specifically to say the Machlokas is only La'achar Gemar Din. But before the Gemar Din, the Chachamim also agree that he can change his mind. Shalach le Reb Nachman bar Reb Chistel, Reb Nachman bar Yaakov. She said Reb Nachman bar Yitzchak. Reb Nachman bar Yaakov. Yelamdenu Rabbeinu. Is the Machlokas before the Gemar Din, or li'acher Gemar Din? And after you tell me that, could you tell me whether we paskin like the Chachamim or like Rabbi Meir? So Rabbi Nachman bar Yaakov said to him, the machlokas is la'acher Gemar Din, and the halacha is like the Chachamim or the Rabbim. And Ravashi says, what actually was not, that was not the question that Rav Nachum bar Yaakov was answering. He was asked the other question about whether it was mechila or whether it's I'll give it to you, which was the first question that we had. Be'etein lecha machloket or b'machu lecha machloket. And after you tell me that, tell me who we paskin, like Rabbi Meir or the Chachamim. And he sent back to him, the machlokes is dafka, the case where he commits himself to giving it. And the halacha is like divrei Chachamim. Okay, that's how they said over the story in Surah, in Pumbedisa. They said the whole thing revolved a different issue. And there they say that Rabbi Chanina bar Shaumia said that they sent actually a shaila from the yeshiva of Rav to Shmuel, that Shmuel should please teach us, Yilambenu Rabbeinu, Lifnei Gmar Din. What if it would be a case that there was no Gmar Din yet, but they actually did a kinyan? So when he said, I'm ready to accept whatever your debt says, and he makes a kinyan with the Edom on that, would he be able to change his mind in that case? That's what they asked him. And Shmuel sent the answer, Ein la'achar kinyan klum. Once there's a kinyan, there's no longer anything to discuss, and there would be no machlokas. You committed yourself with a kinyan, that would work no matter what the situation is.